Well, getting together with friends can, of course, be a lot of fun. And for dogs, the equivalent might be a romp at the dog park. But there are things to keep in mind to make sure that you and your pooch stay safe. Larry Mueller here. Really pleased to have back Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. She takes time every month to spend with us to give us some advice on keeping your pet healthy and my pets as well. Dr. Sandy, great to have you back.
Nice to be here, Larry.
Yesterday, we heard from Dr. John Sirabassi, and we talked with him about pet behavior, essentially. And he just mentioned that dog parks can be great, but they aren't for every dog. And I know you wanted to share some ideas for safety at the dog park.
Yeah, and I think not only safety, but health as well. And so from the preventive medicine side of what I do for a living, you know, I think any dog that's going to the dog park, you really need to hike up your preventive medicine care, which would mean making sure that they're up to date on all of their vaccinations. And that means that puppies that are not fully immunized should not be going to the dog park. And some things that are not like core vaccines that you may still want to consider, one would be definitely kennel cough. We see a lot of dogs that will develop a cough syndrome after being exposed to other dogs, since even though if they're not in a kennel, they're still there sharing saliva and so on while they're playing. And the other one would be leptospirosis. Leptos spread by the urine of wildlife. And so if you're in a dog park that has any standing water or anything, very important that you keep your dog current on that. And that is an annual vaccine. And of course, the other ones like rabies, just to be legal. But parasites are also a huge thing. We see kind of outbreaks in certain dog parks of different parasites. For instance, there was a park recently that we had just every dog that came in with this particular parasite, Giardia. We asked what they did, where they went, and they all went to the same dog park. And so you start getting the environment infected, and it's really easy for dogs to pick up things like that. So, you know, even though we don't have a monthly preventative for Giardia, you need to be prepared that your dog could potentially pick up something and get sick, but it is treatable. And then, of course, flea and tick control. You know, we are going to be experiencing weather at the end of the week here in Wisconsin, 38 degrees, I think is what they're saying.
Yeah.
Perfect weather for deer ticks to come out, even if there's snow on the ground.
Yeah.
If you're taking your dog out to a field area, an area where ticks could potentially be, they need to be on flea and tick control. So that's kind of the health things. But there are a lot of behavior things, too. And my little soundbite that I like to use when I'm talking about dog parks is that dog parks are places for social dogs to go, not a place to socialize your dog. Very different,
very
okay?
Different.
If you have a dog that is antisocial, it should not be in that kind of crazy environment. It needs to be in a controlled environment with, I like to call them therapy dogs, dogs that are not going to react if your dog reacts. And so that limits a lot of dogs. I mean, I see people that have dogs that have aggression issues, have fear issues, maybe even have health issues where they've got some arthritis and they don't want to get bumped. And if they do, they get grumpy. Those are dogs that should not be going to an environment like that. And the other thing I like to think about, too, is the human. Myself, the reason why I missed last month's show is I had foot surgery done. And I have a dog who's like now almost 10 months old. And he loves to go to the dog park near where I live. And, you know, here I'm hobbling along. And I realized that this was not a place for me to be with him because he took off and was at the other end of the park, which is huge. And I could see him interacting with dogs, but I was not there to be able to recall him. He couldn't hear me. He couldn't see me.
Oh.
And because I couldn't keep up with them. And so the owner needs to be able to be in constant contact with that dog. And if that means running after them, if they take off, if they're not listening to you, but you know, trying to make sure your dog has some basic obedience, especially a good recall, because you may have a dog that's really friendly, but that dog over at the other side is not wanting to play. And so you need to be able to call your dog back to you. So, you know, lots of things to be thinking about. One of my favorite apps that I recommend for people is, if you've got a smartphone, is called the Dog Park Assistant. I believe it's free. If it isn't, it's maybe a buck or two, but it is so worthwhile. Not only will it help you locate where dog parks are if you're traveling with your dog, but it will also, there's lots and lots and lots of videos on there that I even have my students watch because it shows really good kind of caution behaviors that if your dog's doing this or there's another dog in the park doing this, you may want to leave. You know, certain looks, certain body postures that may be very threatening. And if you want to be able to protect your dog, knowing, you know, kind of when to intervene, I think would be is really critical. And so great learning tool, not just for veterinarians and vet students, but for pet owners as well.
And Judith just checked and it's 99 cents.
It is. Okay.
For
thank
a buck.
You. Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah. But it is so, I mean, I have learned so much watching it. And again, I just hand my phone and go, hey, it's quiet time here. Watch these videos and hand it off to him. So
wonderful.
Yeah.
Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, our guest from the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. Great to have her back. Thank you for joining in. If you'd like to email us, you can do that at talk@wpr.org. Post a photo of your pet and a question as well on our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of our Facebook page, and you can post. We always love to see the photos, and there's usually some really, really good ones. Deborah, oh, wait a minute. Before we go to Deborah in Minocqua,
okay.
You had one great story you were telling me.
Oh, yes.
About a dog park.
And I'm eating breakfast this morning, and Mark is, you know, on his iPad or whatever reading, and he says, I got to tell you a dog park story, knowing that I was coming here today. This is out west in Seattle. There's a guy and his black lab that take the city bus to the dog park. Unfortunately, in Madison, dogs, unless they're service dogs, aren't allowed on the buses. But this dog could get on and every day would go to the dog park with the owner. Well, the guy's sitting at the bus stop with the dog smoking a cigarette. The bus comes up and he hasn't finished his cigarette. So he's going to wait for the next bus. But the door is open. The dog jumped on. Jumped into a seat next to another rider and watched out the window. And as soon as he got to the dog park spot, opened the doors open and out he went. And the owner was four blocks behind him trying to catch up. But that just goes to show you that dogs sometimes really know their environment. And,
I love that story, too. Oh, man. All right. Now we go to Deborah in Minocqua. Hi, Deb. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you. I have a six-year-old lab, and he tore his ACL on his rear right knee, and he's scheduled for surgery tomorrow, and they're going to do the procedure that they use the fishing line.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm concerned about is I know he has to be shut down for 3 to 6 months,
mm-hmm.
and which will be hard because he's a very active dog, but we can do it. But what I was wondering is, do you have any tips for us during his recovery to make sure that he doesn't tear them out, the fishing line out? We're shutting the upstairs and downstairs off so he can't go up and downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
We'll watch him carefully. But are there any supplements or vitamins or any tips you might have for us?
Well, I think a couple of things. Number one, I'm glad you're changing the environment. If he is not crate adapted, that would be something that would be very helpful so that he's not going to be running to the door if the doorbell rings or to look out the window or trying to jump up and down off of furniture so that when you're not there to be watching him very carefully, he can be confined and be comfortable in his recovery crate. Other things that you could do is, since many dogs that rupture their cruciates have weight issues, if he does have a problem with his weight because he's not going to be exercising, make sure that you are adjusting his diet appropriately so he doesn't put on more weight. Because what we know is that within a year, 50% of dogs will rupture the other side. So there's a very good chance that it may happen on the other side as well. So we want to try to prevent that and prevent that extra weight gain that would be a problem. So really watch what you're feeding him. I'm a strong believer in physical therapy as well. And I don't know if up in your area you have any veterinary physical therapists. We have one that is kept very busy at the veterinary school that teaches the owners some things that they can do at home, but also, you know, has things like underwater treadmills and different exercises and things that she puts the dogs through to aid in the healing and keeping that muscle mass of that leg while he's not using it very well. well, you know, keeping that muscle built up so you've got good joint support. So I think that's really important. If your veterinarian has somebody they recommend, it's worth the extra money to be able to go to a physical therapist. Obviously, when he's outside, you're going to be doing leash walks. And this time of the year, making sure that you have a place shoveled in the yard so he's not having to go through deep snow, which can really aggravate that knee too. So be careful with that, with ice and slippery areas, and make sure that he's just out to do his business and back in again.
He's not overweight at all. He's in very, very good shape, and we will definitely keep him in good shape. But what is your recommendation? Do you think it takes 3 to 6 months? Someone told me it might take up to 9 months to a year for him to fully recover.
Some of it really depends on the type of surgery that's done. There's a surgery called TPLO, which is going to be more involved than the using the suture material, that the fishing line technique. And it's, many of those dogs bounce back a lot faster. So it really is going to depend on the surgical technique that's being done. I hope your veterinarian presented you with the options that are out there, because for a very active dog, you may want to be, if you know you haven't looked at all the options, I think that that would be a very important thing to do. Even though you're scheduled for tomorrow, you may want to take the time today and start doing some research on that.
A procedure they said that they use metal in?
Mm-hmm, that's called a TPLO.
And that's the one that we should look into if he's a very active dog.
And a large dog, yes. That's one that's had good success with the type of dog that you're dealing with. But not everybody is equipped to be able to do it. It does require, you know, some special training and equipment and so on to be able to do that particular surgery. But your question on supplements and things to use, definitely I think your dog would benefit from being on some, a fish oil supplement, a joint support supplement like glucosamine and chondroitin sulfate, or some combination of that. Your veterinarian probably has their favorite brand that they like to use. I like Dazoquin as a brand. That's one that we use at the veterinary school quite a bit. And there's several other ones out there as well. But I think that would be very important. You may even want to be looking at switching your dog over to a joint diet. There are one by the Hills Company and one by Nestle Purina that helps provide your dog with the extra antioxidant vitamins and fatty acids and so on, to help with the controlling some of the inflammatory changes that can occur in the joint.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call very much, Deborah. You can join in too at 800-642-1234. Talking today with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, though, talking with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk about how to keep your pet healthy and happy. And Steve in South Milwaukee up next. Steve, thank you for calling. Hi.
Thank you for the program. My auto shop has adopted a German Shepherd, and it is a very friendly German Shepherd. Kind of greasy, and puts stains all over my dress pants when I go take my car in. I'm looking for a safe dog repellent odor or something I might be able to put in my pocket or spray my pants that's going to keep the dog away for those few minutes I'm there. And I think that the ladies would appreciate it in the summer when they're wearing dresses as well.
Yeah. I wish there was something. There was some research that was done a long time ago looking at dogs that get into garbage cans, and so there are some like repellents that you're supposed to be able to spray on your garbage cans, and that's supposed to keep the dog away. But what they actually found is that dogs learned that when they smelled that meant there was probably good things inside. So there's not a whole lot that you're going to be able to spray on yourself that is going to be effective, but there is a spray, and I'm drawing a blank on the name, but it's a type of, it's not a pheromone, it's an interamone or something they call it. It's a boar pheromone that is in a spray can. There's usually, it's mixed with lavender or something else, so it actually has an odor. But dogs find that particular boar, like pig, pheromone, very, very aversive. And it makes a really loud hissing sound as well. So it's kind of like a little air horn type thing. I will, during a break, look it up because I've actually bought it and had it in my house when my dogs were, a couple of months ago, we had some incidences before Pete got neutered that were really concerning. And this helped break up some of that body posturing, like I'm going to attack you. And it totally changed what they were going to do. And now it's like you just have to pick the can up. And they're like, okay, we won't do that, what we're doing. So, but I'll look it up, what I bought, and let you know later on. But that may be something you'd want to consider. But warn people, because it does make a loud hissing sound. And there is that lavender odor.
I have an idea.
Great. Thank you very much for calling, Steve. And stay listening and... we'll get some of that. We'll get that information to you. Holly in Elm Grove, you're next. Hi, Holly. Thank you for calling.
Thank you, and good morning.
Morning.
I have a 14-year-old female spayed Tonkinese cat who's in relatively good health, other than the fact that she has developed mega colon disease. They would like, she's been evaluated, and she is a good candidate for the surgery, which I think I'm pronouncing correctly, a colectomy, and I'm looking for an opinion.
Well, the surgery is a pretty big deal, and have you tried different things like drug?
Yes, we've done all kinds of things, most of which I would prefer not to mention over the air.
Well, probably, I mean, my guess would be enemas and so on, where, you know, when things get bad. But what are you feeding her? What's the diet that she's on?
It's a prescription diet that's high fiber.
Okay. Sometimes cats do better, actually, with a low fiber diet. The high fiber does help hold moisture, but it's going to produce more fecal material that is going to be ending up in that stretched out colon and have difficulty passing it. So sometimes I'd actually go the 100% the other direction and go with a low residue, low fiber, easily digested diet, so that they produce much less stool. And I think that that might be something, if your veterinarian hasn't tried that, that may be worthwhile trying before you jump in and do a major surgery like this. There are some drugs. It used to be more readily available because it was a human medication, and it goes by the name Propulsid was the brand name, and I'm drawing a blank on, oh, Cisapride is the...
Cisapride,
yeah,
yes.
The chemical name.
Cisapride.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
and then the...
A different kind of laxative that's very sweet. I can't think of what it's
called. Lactulose. Okay. And that's a sugar base laxative that is not able to be digested. And so it basically, it's kind of like someone who's lactose intolerant, drinking milk or whatever, you know what happens with that. That's what this is that you use it to soften the stool, which is going to be harder when you've got all that fiber in there.
Yeah.
So I think, before you jump to surgery, if it's possible to, have a couple of weeks trial and just keep tabs of, how your cat is doing, that may be the answer for you.
And then, so it would be a low
fiber diet than the high fiber diet. Yeah. So it's just the exact opposite of what she's doing. And I've actually had better luck with the majority of cats that have this problem by using a low fiber diet rather than the high fiber.
Well, that's certainly worth a try.
I know. If diet change may do it. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Good luck, Holly. Thanks for calling. Liz in Fitchburg, your turn. Hi, Liz.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Dr. Sandy. I've got a 6.5-year-old French bulldog who developed small bowel disease. She had lost a bunch of weight. She lost some of her fur. She was in very poor health. She was basically starving, even though I was feeding her because everything was going right through her.
Mm-hmm.
So I make all of her food now, and I've got her in a supplement. She's on prednisone and vitamin B12 shots, and she's gained weight, and she's looking much better. And her labs are also looking much better.
Good.
And I'm working with a canine nutritionist who has given me some help. But the question of taurine comes up. She wants me to give her supplements, which I have been doing anyway, in an all-in-one sort of power from NatureBet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that does not contain taurine. And I've gone online and looked, and it says that taurine is not as important for dogs as it is for cats.
You
and
got
I
it.
I was wondering what
yeah.
you think.
Yeah. Dogs, cats are unable to make taurine. They're obligate carnivores, and taurine is an amino acid that they have to take in through ingestion. And this has become actually a big issue in the pet food industry, because taurine is one of those ones that can be destroyed pretty easily with heat processing. And so some of these companies that are making foods and just following the American Association of Feed Control officials' guidelines and not actually going through feeding testing, there's been some recalls recently where they've been taurine deficient foods. And this is a big issue for cats, because they need it every day in their food. If not, they can end up with a condition called dilated cardiomyopathy. They can also develop issues with blindness, because it affects the retina, is very dependent on taurine as well. Dogs, fortunately, most of them can make enough taurine that they don't have any trouble. And so if they're on a diet with, you know, adequate levels of digestible protein, they can make their own taurine. So we usually don't think about supplementing the majority of dogs, because they're able to do it on their own. So I'm really curious as to why the nutritionist is recommending that. Hmm. I don't
really know. She's recommended some other things that I questioned her about, because I've done a lot of research on this. And when I look at the package of the Nature Vet all-in-one supplement, it's got everything that she's recommending, and she wants me to supplement the supplement.
Yeah.
So I'm just not sure if I need to be doing all of this. But
yeah,
the taurine was the question that I really asked her
about. That sounds really weird. And, you know, is the nutrition a member of the American Veterinary Society of veterinary nutritionists? I think it's, I can't remember what the actual link, but is she a boarded nutritionist, or is this someone that's just hung out a flag and said, I'm a nutritionist?
No, she's boarded.
She is. Okay. All right. Well, I mean, I would question, but I think that you know, and anybody is going to be willing to answer that question for you. I just don't see why.
Yeah.
So you can measure taurine levels, blood taurine levels, and that might be something to consider, that, you know, if they're considering that. But I don't think that's a big deal.
Okay, there you go. Thanks, Liz, for calling. Appreciate your call. It's Sue in Madison up next with a comment. Hi, Sue. Thank you for calling.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I just wanted to give a plug to doggy daycares.
Mm-hmm.
I got a mutt who has a lot of energy, and when I first got him, I could take him to the dog park. But over time, his behavior changed, and he became a lot more reactive with
mm-hmm.
other dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, let's put it this way. He shamed himself and me one too many times.
Okay.
Just like barking at other dogs kind of right in their face, and
mm-hmm.
nobody likes that. So we quit going, and it was hard for me to get him enough exercise. And so I ended up taking him to a doggy daycare, and they are able to have him play in small groups of dogs
mm-hmm.
and control his behavior well enough that he gets along with the other dogs. They tell me when he gets out of line, he gets a little squirt in the face.
Yep.
And that breaks the cycle.
Uh-huh.
And he plays for 8 hours straight. And comes home and sleeps.
Wonderful. And, you know, doggy daycares,
it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, you still have to have the same health control stuff, maybe not tick control as much, but you still need to be, you know, worried about gastrointestinal parasites, you know, making sure your dog's up to date on vaccines and so on. But it sounds like you are working with a doggy daycare that's got good staff, that's observing, is able to break groups out into smaller groups that are compatible with each other. And those are things that you really want to be watching. Not all doggy daycares are created equal. And if you've got one like that your dog is doing fine with,
wonderful.
Wonderful. It's a lot more expensive than a $15 a year dog park membership. I can tell you that. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It is, but, you know, for me, it costs $15 each time I take it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
He goes twice a week, and, you know, it takes his edge off.
Yeah, and that's great. You know, and then on the weekends, you can run and do different things with him. So here we are. You know, it's like every other day. He sleeps a day and plays a day. So great.
That's right.
Yeah.
Thanks, Sue.
Absolutely.
Yeah, really appreciate that call. Yeah, and doggy daycare. My brothers take his dog to doggy daycare, and the dog just loved it.
Yep.
Even got a diploma for good behavior.
Oh, wonderful. You know, one of my technicians, this dog has passed away not too long ago, but she would, they had it all on webcams, so she could just go online and be able to pick up different cameras to see what her dog's doing. And so she's paying money every day to take her dog to doggy daycare, and there he is laying on a couch in this play area. And she's like yelling at the computer screen, "Get off and play!" So she'd pick up the phone and call and say, "Would you please get my dog up and moving?" So
oh man, I love it. Well, that's a nice feature though.
Oh yeah,
I'd be able to see that. Andy at Partyville, hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, Dr. Sandy and Larry, thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I have had black labs all my life, and we currently have three female black labs, age 10, age 5, and a 7-month-old puppy. The 7-month-old puppy now has a disgusting habit of eating poop in the backyard.
Oh, yeah.
We have tried several of the commercial products, even like the maximum dose, double dosing, and it doesn't have any effect on her. I think she likes the hot pepper supplement or whatever's in it or something, because she has had no effect on her whatsoever. Short of taking her out on a leash in 40 below wind chills, is there anything else I can do, or is it something she's going to eventually outgrow possibly?
Probably not. We see a lot of dogs do this. It is a behavior that is hardwired into dogs. When you look at female dogs that are raising a litter of puppies, they ingest the fecal material from the babies to keep the nest area clean. And so it is considered a normal behavior, although in our world, a very disgusting behavior. You've tried the things that make the stool taste bad. And my kind of analogy to using those is if the dog has already learned that stool is a fun, safe thing to pick up and play with or eat, and then all of a sudden you make it taste bad, they just wait and for a while and then get back into trying it again. So it's kind of like I use the analogy of apples. If you suddenly bite into an apple that's mealy and yucky, you don't give up on apples for the rest of your life. But if that was the first apple you ever had in your life, you may think that all apples are like that, so leave it alone. So it goes back to when puppies are young and in the environment that they're raised in, that it needs to be a very enriched environment so that there's toys and other things that they can play with, so that they're not inclined to go and say, well, let's go sample the poop because there's nothing else in the environment for me to play with. So it often goes way back to when the puppy was with the breeder, and that's when they may start sampling and developing that behavior. So a couple of things, yes, that, you know, the number one thing that I tell people is pick it up. You need to be out there picking it up before she has a chance to eat it. And distract her or redirect her to another behavior, such as, you know, instead of defecate, turn around and eat it, it's defecate, chase a ball. So it means you need to be out there even in 40 degree below zero weather to be able to redirect her to something else. And that's the best advice I can give you. I've had some people have good success with a drug called Prozyme. It's an enzymatic product. You know, you sprinkle it on the food, and it claims that it's supposed to make the food more digestible and so on. In reality, I think all it is, when you look at the ingredients, is it's making the stool taste bad. But that would be something that you could use on a daily basis, and it may be helpful as well.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. We had a Facebook question from Cindy. Are there ways to exercise your 7-month-old Louisiana Catahoula leopard dog? Is that how you pronounce it, Catahoula? When it's too icy to walk outside. What kind of a dog is that anyway?
It's a hound, okay. And they are very active dogs, and they're quite beautiful. They're spotted, kind of a black and gray and white kind of coloration and so on. They're very beautiful dogs, but they're kind of related to coonhounds and red-bone coonhounds and so on. They're kind of all in that class. And boy, this is a tough one. You know, when they're inside and it's too icy, doggy daycare. That would be one thing if your dog is social and can go to the places like that. Having games that you can play in the house. And I like to do like hide and seek with my dogs. So we will, you know, hide. One of us will hide in a bedroom and you know, the other person's keeping the dog someplace else. And then we're like, oh, go find him. You know, go find dad. And so playing hide and seek, getting interactive dog toys like Kong toys and things that dispense food may help keep your dog mentally stimulated. It's not going to burn off a lot of calories, but there are lots of those things that are going to keep them busy and entertain them. And I think that's probably the big reason why dogs get destructive and so on is that they're bored. So look into some of those interactive dog toys, and you can just Google it and you'll see tons of them coming up. They're very helpful for dogs like this.
We have a Facebook question from Julie. Our 3-year-old heeler, Springer, has been diagnosed with a chronic
iliopsoas
strain and starts rehab therapy tomorrow. What do you do for these injuries?
Yeah, that is a muscle that runs down the inside of the rear leg. And often when we see a dog that's had an injury to that particular muscle, they've done the, you know, they may have splayed out or done something. In fact, I just had a dog in, a Portuguese water dog, that I diagnosed this in about September. And the big thing is rehab. They need to go in for some rehabilitation. There's a lot of exercises and different things that they can do to help strengthen that muscle and get them feeling more comfortable. So if your veterinarians have not recommended that, that would be the number one thing.
Yeah, and so you need somebody that really is trained in that
to
area.
That particular muscle to be able to know how to, you know, what exercises are needed to be able to keep that under control or get it under control.
And a Facebook question from Amy. I have a 9-month-old puppy. Oh, she included a photo, which we haven't gotten up here yet.
There it is.
Oh, there it is. Yeah.
Nice little black lab puppy. Yeah.
It's a mix of a German Shepherd, Golden Retriever, and Black Lab. Extremely active, constantly running and going on walks between 6 and 8 a day walks. But I worry about what it might be doing to her growing joints. Should I be giving a fish oil supplement? Or is it better to wait until she's full grown?
Yeah, you really have to modify the exercise that puppies get. They're kind of like racehorses to a degree. You'd want to, you know, running is fine, but I wouldn't be hooking the dog up to a leash around your waist and doing a marathon. You know, watching the surfaces that they run on, if it's out in the backyard and so on, that's great. But it's like the hard pounding, you know, taking to the pavement exercise is going to be a problem. Walking, not a big deal. And that's going to, you know, the part of walking is they get to have that mental stimulation of reading all the P-mail as they go along, you know, on all the different places where dogs have gone. So I'd say keep up with what you're doing. Your dog probably does not need any supplements at this point.
Mark in Luck, Wisconsin, your turn. Hi, Mark.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
Say, I've got my German Shepherd, she's 7 years old, and the skin on her hindquarters, it turned black a year ago or 2 years ago, and it gets little sores. And we've had her in for allergy tests, and they really can't find anything, and we've sent stuff in to an independent lab, and we got a report back, you know, that she should eat certain kind of fish food and stuff like that. So we put her on a non-grain diet, and we give her antibiotics, too. They recommended antibiotics, and it clears up for a while, and then it keeps coming back. And I just, you know, and I like my vets. I've had them for 30 years.
Yeah.
And they do a really good job.
This is up over her rump area, like tail head, that area?
No, it's on her skin in between, you know, her crotches.
Oh, okay.
Part where there is no hair.
Yeah. So a couple of things that I get concerned about in that area, a number of dogs, female dogs, can have an issue that we call a recessed vulva, where they're instead of their vulva being a normal position, it's kind of buried in a big donut of tissue, and it can harbor bacteria and yeast, and it stays moist, and we see kind of chronic recurrent skin infections back in that area. I don't know if that's what's going on, but if that is the case, that she has anatomically, she's a little defective, which is common, that, you know, sometimes we have to surgically do They call it a vulvoplasty. It's basically a facelift on the back end. They take off some tissue and kind of lift everything up so that we no longer have the vulva buried in that skin area. I hope that they are also doing things like when she does have an infection, culturing to make sure that she doesn't have any resistant bugs. We're seeing more and more dogs with resistant staph, very similar to what's going on in the human world as well. Your comment regarding sending off testing for food allergies, the problem with that is that it doesn't work. You can send that same blood sample off to a bunch of labs. You're going to get that a whole bunch of different answers. The only way you can really rule out food allergies is to go through an elimination diet trial where you put her on something like usually a hydrolyzed protein diet, and that's all she eats. Even things like her chewable heartworm preventative, we switch to something topical so that any of the common ingredients in pet food are not going into her system. And after 8 to 10 weeks, usually we've got some evidence of improvement if that's the case. Making sure that she's on year-round flea and tick control, also important. It's amazing how many people have, raccoons and possums and so on that are nocturnal, and you may not even know that you've got an issue like that, and that's, something that's very, very easy to prevent as well. But I'd be looking at her anatomically and just see, is there something back there that needs to be fixed? It's just such a weird area for allergic skin disease. Most dogs with allergies, ears and feet, rather than the underside.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, but with the antibiotics that help clear it up, is that an issue? If that works, is that something that we can keep doing long term?
Yeah, and making sure that you're using the antibiotics long enough. That's the problem is the more antibiotics you use, the greater the chance that you're going to end up selecting for some resistant bacteria. Making sure that if you've confirmed that there is a bacterial infection there by doing cytology, if there is, and you've cultured and you know the appropriate antibiotic, if it's a fairly superficial infection, you're looking at probably 3 to 4 weeks of therapy minimum. If it's a deep skin infection, you may be looking at 6 to 8 weeks of antibiotics nonstop. So making sure that you are using them appropriately.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much, Mark, for calling. Appreciate your call. Talking today with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, professor of veterinary medicine at the University of Wisconsin School of Vet Medicine. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So happy to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at your pet's health with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. Great to have you listening in. Join in at 1-800-642-1234. Can also go on our Facebook page, post a photo and question there. Our Facebook page title is The Larry Mueller Show. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. I use an app. It's called Map My Run for physical activity. And a lot of people use apps and have gadgets to monitor their own physical activity. You have an option for pets.
You got it. Everybody's, getting these things called Fitbits and so on that monitor, how many steps you take a day and how well you sleep, and you can keep track of calories and so on with it. Well, they now have a FitBark, okay, instead of a Fitbit for dogs. It attaches to their collar and it helps, with monitoring activity, how much they're sleeping. So you can actually, see what your dog is doing and how much exercise they're getting throughout the day. Similar to that, there's another one called the Whistle Activity Monitor. They run about $100, so very similar to the prices that you would use for something for a human being as well. There's another one called Voice, VOICE. All of them basically do the same thing. But while I was looking at these things, a couple of other things really came up that I thought, wow, this is so cool. There's a device on the market now that's called the Pet Cube, all one word, and it's a little camera device that you set up, and there's a program with your smartphone so that you can actually watch what your pet is doing. So obviously you have to have it in a spot where your pet likes to hang out. You can talk through your phone to it. So if your dog is barking or whatever, you can tell them to be quiet, even though you're not at home, okay? And This is what's so cool. It's got a laser pointer built into it that you can manipulate from your phone to exercise your pet
while you're not even at home.
So I thought that is the coolest thing, especially for cat owners, because cats like to sleep like 20 hours a day.
Yeah.
Wouldn't this be cool to, you know, you see your cat snoozing there to suddenly say, hey, Fluffy, get up, and then have the laser pointer going? Oh, you know, I just thought that was great. So, yeah.
I love it. Oh, my goodness. I wonder if employers are going to like it, though. You know,
you're on the phone watching your pet and talking to your pet all day long. Yeah.
Oh, man. Courtney in Manhattan, Kansas. Thank you for calling. Hi. Oh.
I'm calling about my Black Lab Springer Spaniel mix. He's a little bit over a year old. And a couple months ago, he started itching and biting and licking himself constantly, and he hasn't stopped, and he's been losing hair on his belly and his legs and anywhere he can reach, and we'll wake up in the middle of the night to the sound of him just licking and licking his paws and his legs. And we took him to the vet, and they told us to try an antihistamine, just a generic drugstore one, and we've been giving it to him every day, and it hasn't really seemed to help. And they said it might be allergies, but it's just not lightening up at all. So seeing if you guys have any ideas.
Yeah, it's odd that your dog is just like as young as it is to be developing allergies. I mean, we do see it, but usually they're a little bit older when we start seeing environmental mm-hmm. allergies or food allergies. I always, you know, stop and think about like the common things that can cause intense itching. And one of them that I don't know if your veterinarian has looked into is, you know, have they done skin scrapings to look for external parasites? So, you know, number one, flea and tick control. I keep harping on that, making sure your pet's on that year round, you know, always be using it. But there's a couple of parasites that can cause really intense itching. And the fact that your dog's waking up at night and licking his legs and doing all of this, there's one called scabies, and it's more common than you would think. A lot of wildlife, especially foxes and things, can carry it, and they are able to survive off of the pet long enough, or the wildlife long enough, for your dog to be able to contract them. You don't need direct animal-to-animal contact. So if you have not gone through a therapeutic trial for treating scabies, I would strongly recommend that as well. I'd also be making sure that you're looking for other parasites that can cause secondary skin infections like Demodex and so on that may cause hair loss. And that would be part of doing some of those skin scrapings. That particular parasite, Demodex, is treated very differently. But the things that we typically recommend as a scabies trial would be to either use a spot-on heartworm parasite control product called Revolution. It's a active ingredient called Selamectin. There's another one that the Bayer company makes called Advantage Multi, and we will sometimes use that one as well. So if you've not tried that, definitely recommend that. But I would be thinking cytology, skin scraping for parasites, cytology to look for secondary infections, bacteria and yeast, treating those things appropriately, and then seeing how much itch is left. If the dog is still itchy and you've cleaned up all the infections, then we start thinking more, is this an allergic skin type problem? And we go down that path.
Okay. Mm. So is there any way that I would be able to notice on his skin any sight of something like this?
No, these are all microscopic organisms. Okay. So unless you've got superhuman vision, you're not going to find them. In fact, many okay. times scabies, I mean, I've been a vet for 35 years, and I scrape and scrape and scrape, and it's like, boy, the dog looks like a scabies dog, acts like one, and we treat it as such, even though I never found them, and they get better. So it's sometimes they're very difficult to find. So just because you don't find them under the microscope, don't give up on that. And I think it would be worthwhile talking to your veterinarian about going through a round of treatment for that.
There you go, Courtney.
Great. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Courtney, probably listening online somewhere in Manhattan, Kansas. Let's go to Terry in Middleton. Hi, Terry.
Good morning. How are you doing? So that's a great show. Questions for Sandy. I said my last few dogs I've had, I've lost them both tumors. The last one, found out she had a tumor, and I opted for the surgery, which was very pricey, which I would have done in a heartbeat again. And then about a week later, she collapsed from a sarcoma that she had on her spleen. The first one was a lymphoma, And he said she might have, you know, several months to maybe a year or so. And then the second one literally blew within about a week, which obviously, you know, vets can't see everything.
Mm-hmm.
Are you finding tumors to be more prevalent in dogs? I get different. I see a lot of people have dogs lose. People lose their dogs from tumors?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really, really good question because, you know, if we had the reason why, you know, cancer's out there, we'd, you know, I'd be a multimillionaire if we could find a cure for it. But I think a couple of things come to mind. One is pets are living longer. And if you've got, you know, if you don't get hit by a car or die of an infectious disease, you're probably going to die of either cancer or some type of organ failure. And when you're looking at mortality, causes of death in different sizes of dogs, small breed dogs tend to die of kidney failure, heart failure, that type of thing. Large breed dogs, cancer. And so some of it may be genetic. And so we know certain breeds of dogs are more prone to developing different types of cancer. And so if, you know, when you, you know, I see a Bernese mountain dog, you think histiocytic sarcomas. And if you, you know, see every, you know, different breeds have their different types of cancer. And so it's you know, looking at if you are getting another dog, going back several generations and saying, what did this, you know, the ancestors of my dog die of? And so that's something to be looking into. There's a big study going on right now that's the Golden Retriever lifetime study where they're tracking for the rest of the dog's life. They were, I don't know if they're still enrolling puppies, but they were enrolling puppies just because so many Goldens die of cancer and various things where they are taking these dogs and every few months they go in and they give hair clippings, toenail clippings, blood samples, and they're tracking to make sure these dogs, you know, see what happens with these dogs and doing some genetic testing and so on. So we'll find out more in time, but right now, I mean, you're doing everything you can, keeping on a healthy diet, keeping them slender, and, you know, choosing your dog correctly.
Yeah, and boy, would that be a cool study to be involved in.
I know, yeah. We've got a couple of them at the veterinary school, and it's a lot of work because, you know, the owners having to come in frequently, but it's very it's going to be interesting to see this at the end.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, Terry, thank you. David and Mequon, your turn. Hi, David.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, my man, Buckingham Winchester, part poodle, part cocker, now is starting to bark. Has developed warts, okay? I don't know the Greek and Latin medical term for it. I didn't do well in that class.
That's all right.
It's a cauliflower-shaped warts. And the last time we were at the vet, Noah said, oh, don't worry about it. But now he's developed two more, and I'd like to know what we can do to remove them.
They're probably a type of skin growth called a sebaceous adenoma. They're usually benign skin tumors of the oil-producing glands, and they kind of get a little greasy. They look like pink cauliflower. They can sometimes bleed if they get bumped. What we have started doing at the veterinary school is our dermatology department has a cryosurgery unit to be able to freeze these things. And, you know, some dogs, depending on where they're located and how big they are, may need to have some sedation being given. But for the most part, it's a pretty non-invasive way of getting them done. But, you know, knowing some dogs are just prone to getting like multiple ones over their lifetime. So I usually only recommend removing the ones that are going to be traumatized, like by the collar or where the dog can scratch or chew at them. Those would be the ones that I would really be focusing on. And the other ones that are just cosmetic, don't worry about them.
No, there we go.
Well, one further question. Can they be laser removed, or can you use any of the human wart removing type things?
I would not be using any of the salicylic acid type things that they use in people. One, the dog may lick it. They do take prolonged contact. It's like why warts don't disappear in people very often. And remember, these are skin growths. not right. usually viral caused warts, although we do see dogs getting warts that are like from the papillomavirus. What you're describing sounds very different. So no over-the-counter products. To be honest with you, I really don't know about using laser surgery. I think cryo seems to be the thing that most people are going to, but that would be something I would be glad to check with my surgical colleagues at the vet school and just see if anybody's doing anything with that.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thanks.
How would I find out what you found out?
You can either email me at the veterinary school and
Even post on our Facebook page.
On the Facebook page, yeah.
Are you with the vet school in Madison?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, all right. Well, one of your grads is my vet, so.
Oh, wonderful.
All right.
Okay.
I will probably contact you because I keep sending money to you guys.
All right.
All right.
Thank you.
And it wouldn't hurt to post on our Facebook page.
Yeah.
If you get a minute, just post it up there.
No problem.
That's wonderful. Darlene in Franklin, hi.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
You're welcome. Thanks for taking my call. I have a 13-year-old German Shepherd who has recently been diagnosed with mega esophagus. It's a really tough situation with her because one of the remedies that I'm being told about is to try to sit her up sort of in a chair. They make these chairs for these dogs and feed her that way so the gravity is going to pull that food down. Unfortunately, with her age, and she has had surgery on one of her ligaments in her back then, kind of left her muscles a little bit weak.
Mm-hmm.
Sitting her up is not an option. I'm trying to deal with this with diet, but is there anything that you would suggest? Besides, she's on
famotidine. Yeah. You know, I tell you what, we've got to get to the news, but if you want to just listen, I will give you all kinds of good information on megasophagus after we get back.
Yeah, we'll take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on The Ideas Net, and then we will be back with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. You stay with us. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's easy to assume that everything is fine for your pet, but like they say, an ounce of prevention can be worth a pound of cure. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us as we visit with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk of the UW School of Veterinary Medicine. She takes time every month to spend with us to give us advice on keeping our pets happy and healthy. And Dr. Sandy, again, thank you so much.
Hey, you're welcome. Before we had the news break, someone called and had some questions about her 14-year-old dog that has a condition called mega esophagus.
Yeah, what is that?
Well, the esophagus is the tube that connects the oral cavity to the stomach that carries food. And it's a muscular tube that contracts and makes sure that the food gets, you know, from once you swallow, gets pushed all the way down into the stomach. And it should remain empty all the time, but sometimes that muscle becomes very lax for various reasons, and so instead of when you swallow it getting pushed into the stomach, it just kind of builds up into this, you know, a huge stretched out tube inside your chest cavity. The health risks for dogs, besides not being able to get the food where they need it, is that they may regurgitate, which means they put their head down, or when they're sleeping, material can come up from the esophagus and they can inhale it and develop aspiration pneumonia. So these dogs are really sometimes very difficult to be able to manage. I hope that the owner has looked into potential causes for this, getting besides the diagnosis of yes, your dog's got a dilated esophagus, but ruling out things like does this dog have a condition? There's a muscle condition called myasthenia gravis, which can be treated, and there are some tests that can be done for that. And so there may be some underlying thing that you can do to actually cure your dog of this problem. Looking for mechanical reasons as well. Unfortunately, for a 14-year-old dog, we're looking at either strictures, which may be able to be dealt with. There's ways that they can go in and dilate strictures. It does sometimes require lots of episodes of going to specialists to have different procedures done. But in the long run, it may be able to provide her dog with some, a good quality of life. But in the meantime, the recommendation of feeding upright is one of the best things you can do. And it's trying to come up with something something that would be appropriate for the dog. A lot of people make their own things, but sometimes just, I call it dancing with your dog, if you can, kind of holding them up, and so that they're eating on the kitchen counter, they're eating elevated, letting gravity help get the food down to the stomach. Sometimes changing the texture of the food to like either meatballs or a slurry goes down easier. So there's different things like that that we can try, but it is an unfortunate thing that usually ends up just requiring management at home and recurrent treatments of aspiration pneumonia if it occurs.
Kathy in Wausau has a question for us. Hi, Kathy. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a 14-year-old male, part German Shepherd, and the issue with him is he has extreme restlessness in the evenings. He goes outside. He comes inside several times an hour. And I'm wondering about cognitive issues. He does have Cushing's. He's had it for 2.5 years, and he's well managed on his medication. He's also, in the last month, had an incontinence problem, but he wears a belly band, and that's very well tolerated. The things that we've tried for this, we had a trial of tramadol for possible hip problems, because he does have some stiffness in his hips, but it doesn't really keep the restlessness from him. We've also had a trial of Xanax. That did not work well. He had Pepcid, and we've gone natural as far as melatonin, the thunder shirt, a pheromone collar. None of that worked. And it's the same on the weekend when we're there to play with him more during the day. Mm-hmm. It's the same restlessness in the evening as it is during the weeknights. And other than that, though, he has a high quality in life. He loves his walks. He's playful. He eats well. So everything else is good. The only thing I can think of is it's almost like in humans where you, when there's dementia people and they get like that sundowning.
Right, syndrome. And that's the first thing that came to mind when you were bringing this up is does this dog have something else besides the Cushing's disease? We know that with Cushing's disease, with the extra cortisol, this is an overactive adrenal gland that it produces too much cortisol and it can raise their blood pressure. They can pant a lot. They can be really uncomfortable. I would be making sure that, even though you're saying he's been well controlled, the fact that he's developing some incontinence, I'm wondering if he truly is well controlled. And maybe it's time to go back in and see if his medication needs to be tweaked at all. Making sure that his blood pressure is normal, kidney values are normal, all that stuff. So time, just go back in for a good thorough look over. You're trying a lot of the things that we would be recommending for dealing with dogs that potentially have cognitive decline, but there are some very specific drugs that we can use. And again, I'd have to probably look to see if they're compatible with the drugs that you're using to treat Cushing's disease. Anytime we start using drugs that we don't use every day, you have to, have to pull books out and start to look up and say, are we going to cause more harm? But there's one drug that is used called Anapril that is used for dogs with cognitive decline. It's going to be pretty pricey for a big dog, and it doesn't work for all dogs, but that might be something to look into with your veterinarian. There's another drug that I've had some senior dogs do better on that is a milk protein extract, and it's called Anxietane. You can get it over the counter, through like online shopping places like Amazon carries it. Very safe to use. And some people swear by it and say that their dog does well with that as well. So you may want to look into that. It's not that expensive. But other than that, I'm thinking, I don't really have a whole lot of other suggestions for you. But being a large breed dog with Cushing's, they can have the pituitary dependent type, but making sure that he doesn't have like an adrenal gland tumor. So abdominal ultrasound, may be necessary to see. Is there something there that's making him uncomfortable as well?
Okay, because he does go in for that stem test a couple of times a year to check how the trilistan is, what he's on, how well that's being metabolized. So, we've done that part of it. The second thing that you mentioned, the milk protein, would you repeat the name of that again?
It's called Anxietane, A-N-X-I-T-A-N-E, I think, is how you spell it.
Okay, that sounds real good. The first one we had thought about, but the Cushing's medication is also pretty expensive, so this sounds like it might be a good alternative.
Okay, good
Worth
luck.
Worth a try. Thanks a lot for calling, Kathy. Appreciate it. We had a caller from Diane who has a 2.5-year-old Yorkie, still has some baby teeth, and her vet wants to pull them. What are the pros and cons of that? You got a 2.5-year-old with baby teeth.
Oh, my goodness. Well, it's a problem, a severe problem for these dogs. A lot of small breed dogs and even some larger breed dogs will not lose their baby tooth, and the baby tooth is sitting in the same spot where the permanent sits, and so it starts throwing the bite off. And when we have two teeth in the spot that one needs to be in, they're much more prone to periodontal disease and will likely end up losing both teeth. And if they've been in there that long, my guess is that you probably do have some periodontal disease going on. These would have to be surgically extracted. They are often in, you know, sitting in there firm. And so you're looking at having them, you know, gum tissue excised, some bone removed, the tooth elevated out and so on. But I always recommend this. In fact, in the last couple of weeks, I've had a bulldog puppy with retained teeth, 3 miniature poodles with retained teeth, 2 French bulldogs with retained teeth, and a pointer.
Wow.
And so that's just in the last couple of weeks. So I've been keeping our dental service very busy with all these dogs. So, yeah, that probably should have been taken care of at the time of spay or neuter when they were 6 or 7 months of age.
You know, we were just talking about cognitive issues, and Diane called to say that Purina is coming out with a food called Bright next month that is specifically formulated for dogs with cognitive issues.
Yeah, what this is it's the Proplan food. I believe this is what it is. Proplan is reformulating things to have extra antioxidants and fatty acids in it to help with some of the degeneration that may occur. And they are going to be having a senior formula. There is a diet that Hills makes called BD, Brain Diet, and it's a prescription diet. And I've had some dogs that have done well with that. So thank you for bringing that up. I just totally, you know, did not even think about addressing it from the nutritional standpoint.
Barbara in Wales up next. Hi, Barb. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. I'm wondering about dog food, the pros and cons on the fillers, the quality. We just got a puppy who's like 4 months old, and we were recommended to buy the puppy formula by, let's say, Purina. Meanwhile, I did some reading and got interested in a couple of brands from that come in from Canada that don't appear to have any fillers. She loves that stuff. She inhales it.
What do you mean by fillers? I'm just curious what you're saying, because any ingredient that's put in a pet food is there for a reason, and it's part of making the balanced diet. So what do you consider fillers?
A lot of the wheat products and corn products.
That is actually, those are ingredients that are providing protein, energy, vitamins, fatty acids. And so they're part of making the diet be, you know, a complete and balanced diet. And so, you know, I don't like using the term filler because that makes me think of things like sawdust, where it's not going to add anything, any benefit to the dog. But what you've just said are things that can be part of the diet as long as it's a part of the complete and balanced diet. Remember, dogs are not strict carnivores like cats are. And so they don't have the same issues with, you know, getting things like vegetable proteins and so on in their food. It's interesting that you brought up, you know, you did some research. When I go on and start looking, online at, you know, recommended pet foods, it's like, where does this information come from? The ranking of pet foods and so on. And it's not done by veterinary nutritionists. This is usually just private people that are looking at bags and coming up with their own ideas. I look at feeding a dog what I think is appropriate would be a food that's appropriate for the size of your dog and the age of your dog. So small breed or large breed growth formula would be important. Making sure that it is a food that you can afford, making sure that your dog does well on it, meaning that their stools are normal, the quality, the volume of it is normal. And then, you know, does your dog like it or not? And I also think that it's really important that you work with companies that actually go through feeding trials with their pet food. And it should say that on there, that it's that has gone through AFCO feeding trials, not formulated to meet AFCO standards, because then they're just following a recipe and who knows what the finished product's going to be. And that some of the smaller companies that are out there, that's one of the big issues with it. And I also like to say, try to vary things from time to time, because if we suddenly find out that, you know, brand X may be have a slight deficiency in this, you know, if your dog's food fixated, you're in trouble. And so, you know, every once in a while, change things up. Obviously, do the changeover slowly, but don't, you know, don't become fixed on one particular brand.
There we go.
Are you saying that there's virtually no difference between a cheap dog food and a better dog food?
No, I'm not saying that. But you don't always get what you pay for in the dog food world. And some of these, like, non-grain diets have carbohydrate. You can't make a dry food without some type of carbohydrate source in it. And if you start looking at, you know, is corn or wheat worse than potatoes, you know, you're going to be getting more nutritional value from corn or wheat than you would be from the potato that's holding the food together. So, you know, they can say, yes, we're grain free, but is it actually better for the dog? Maybe not necessarily. Some of these diets are usually higher in fat. They may be higher in calories. They may have a better coat. And those are all things that we have to weigh out when we're looking at food. It's a huge business out there, but just watch what you're reading and, you know, be aware that most of the stuff you're going to see on Google is not going to be written by experts. I do strongly recommend that you work, you know, go to the website. They've got lots of good food information on there.
Now, which website is
it? It's the American Association of Veterinary Nutritionists. And I'd have to, there may be some other letters in there, but if you Google that, it will come up.
Veterinary nutritionist.
Yeah, that would be a really good place for you to go and look and get, you know, professional, research-based, evidence-based nutrition guidelines.
Yeah,
that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, okay. That's exactly.
People have changed dramatically, though, with this other food. They're not, you know, as there is not as much volume because there's not as much fiber there. You know, I assume absorbing moisture.
Yep.
And so it's a finer, not finer, it's actually a little bit of a more texture in the stool.
Yeah, well, you know, and that's all things to consider. And if you can afford it and your dog likes it and it's formulated to meet the, you know, the age that your dog is at and the size that your dog is at, there are some of these premium foods out there that are for all stages. And I just think that that's really difficult to meet everybody's needs, adult puppies and everything. And when it's an all-stage diet, we know that it has to be a puppy formula, which is why a lot of dogs get overweight.
Yeah. And by the way, Judith looked it up. It is the American Academy of Veterinary Nutrition. So if you go to www.aavn.org.
Yep. Perfect.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and we'll post that up on the Facebook page, too. Judith probably already got it up there in her usual efficient way. Richard in Galena, Illinois, your turn. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm just adding something to the conversation you had about, I think it's called megasophagus.
Uh-huh.
We have about a 90-pound dog we got from the Humane Society. He's a part lab, part Rottweiler, and full of energy. When we got him, he had a lot of problems. One of the problems he had was whenever he'd eat, he would vomit. And I noticed after a while, I mean, it really was getting bothersome. We never had him diagnosed as anything, but we had friends who had Great Danes they were raising that had megasophagus. So I guessed it was that. And I noticed that after he vomited, he ate the food. And you know how when you take dry food, we only feed our dogs dry food, plus with some yogurt. But when you take dry food and you add water to it, it expands. Well, what was happening was he was eating the dry food. It was expanding inside him. He vomited. Once it had expanded, he ate it and he was fine. So we started taking the dry food a couple hours before we fed him. And we soaked it in water and let it expand. And he was fine after that.
Yeah, changing the texture. That was one of the things that I brought up. You know, either going to a canned or moistening it down, making a slurry. Sometimes like a dog food milkshake works better in some of these dogs. But just remember, there's a big difference between vomiting and regurgitation. Vomiting is active. That's where the stomach contracts, and usually they're smacking their lips. And, you know, anybody, any human that's vomited know that, you know, your stomach starts to contract and you may gag a little bit before it comes up. Regurgitation with megaesophagus is very different. It's passive. They just open their mouth and blah, up it comes. And so there's no abdominal press or anything. When dogs are actively vomiting, they're able to close off their epiglottis, you know, their larynx, and prevent aspiration. With when they're regurgitating, they can't do that, and so they'll often inhale some of the material that's coming up in their, you know, up through their throat and mouth, and that's where we run into trouble.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Richard. Brent in Waterloo, thank you for calling. Hi.
Yeah. Hi. How are you guys doing? Great Good. Show.
Thank you.
My call was along the same lines. We have a 9-year-old English bulldog that was having regurgitation and vomiting. You're right, they are very two different things. And what we found, what we did was we first had him tested for the myasthenia gravis, and all three tests came up negative. We began grinding his food up in a food processor and then mixing with water, creating like a oatmeal. And then we also treated him for myasthenia gravis, and it's been about 5 years and we have had no issues.
Wonderful. Boy, yeah, you know, but when I hear bulldog, one of the things that we see more commonly in bulldogs than any other breed is a sliding hiatal hernia. And what that means is the stomach is actually getting up into the chest cavity, and we'll see these dogs either vomiting or regurgitating. And so that would be something that would, if it was a bulldog, would be on my radar as well. Because sometimes that can be a surgically correctable type of thing.
Sure. Yeah. And the other thing we did was elevate his food bowl.
Uh-huh.
And obviously with a bulldog, you don't have to go too high.
Yes. Right.
But, the biggest thing was the treatment for myasthenia gravis.
Good.
My eyes,
yeah.
Other than that, he's been healthy. He's played fly ball for 9 years. And
awesome. A bulldog that does fly ball. Unbelievable. Yeah. Oh, so cool. Yeah.
He'll actually be in a tournament in Madison this weekend, if anyone's interested.
Oh, my goodness.
It is so much fun to watch. If you want to see dogs go crazy. But fly ball is they have like relay teams where they have to run down a runway and hit a board, get the tennis ball, run back to their owner, and then the next dog is released, and they just, you know, back and forth, and so they're all excited and they're barking, and it's just an amazing event. I have never seen a bulldog do it, though. So it's usually border collies and everything.
Right. He's definitely a show.
Where in Madison is this? Where in Madison?
I do not know the exact location.
Is it with the Kennel Club?
I believe it might be.
Okay, so maybe
right, it's so the Dane County
Badger Kennel Club.
Oh, Badger Kennel Club.
Yep.
Go on.
I know
the Badger.
Might be, there are teams in the, if you search Madison flyball teams, you could probably find the team that's hosting it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Because right away people would say, "I want to go see that."
I know. A lot of fun. Yeah.
Brent, thank you so much. I really appreciate your call. And oh my goodness, here we are. Out of time once again.
It always goes so fast.
Doesn't
oh, my goodness.
Oh,
yeah.
Lots of great calls. And obviously, you did your wonderful, normal job, too.
Well, thank you. It's always fun. Yep.
And you're back second Tuesday of the month, so that'll be February 10th.
There we go. Yep.
Thank you, Sandy.
Hey, you're welcome.
Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, our guest from the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. And as I said, she will be back. She always comes on the second Tuesday of the month pretty much every time, and it's February 10th next time around. So that's the next time we will have her on. Tomorrow, let's look at tomorrow. At 11 o'clock, we'll get an update on Wisconsin's bald eagle population and find out about the upcoming eagle watching opportunities at 11. Then 11:45, Professor Francis Halzen will tell us about the Ice Cube Project in Antarctica and how he became Neutrino Man in a graphic novel. You stay with us.